Harper Audio presents Sparkling Cyanide by Agatha Christie, performed by Hugh Fraser.
Book 1. Rosemary. What can I do to drive away remembrances from mine eyes? 6 people were thinking of Rosemary Barton, who had died nearly a year ago. Chapter 1. Iris Marl. Iris Marl was thinking about her sister, Rosemary. For nearly a year, she had deliberately tried to put the thought of Rosemary away from her. She hadn't wanted to remember. It was too painful, too horrible. The blue, cyanosed face, the convulsed, clutching fingers, the contrast between that and the gay, lovely Rosemary of the day before. Well, perhaps not exactly gay. She had had flu. She had been depressed, run down. All that had been brought out at the inquest. Iris herself had laid stress on it. It accounted, didn't it, for Rosemary's suicide? Once the inquest was over, Iris had deliberately tried to put the whole thing out of her mind. Of what good was remembrance? Forget it all. Forget the whole horrible business. But now she realized she had got to remember. She had got to think back into the past, to remember carefully every slight, unimportant-seeming incident. That extraordinary interview with George last night necessitated remembrance. It had been so unexpected, so frightening. Wait. Had it been so unexpected? Hadn't there been indications beforehand? George's growing absorption, his absent-mindedness, his unaccountable actions, his, well, queerness was the only word for it. All leading up to that moment last night when he had called her into the study and taken the letters from the drawer of the desk. So now there was no help for it. She had got to think about Rosemary. To remember. Rosemary. Her sister. With a shock, Iris realized suddenly that it was the first time in her life she had ever thought about Rosemary. Thought about her, that is, objectively, as a person. She had always accepted Rosemary without thinking about her. You didn't think about your mother, or your father, or your sister, or your aunt. They just existed, unquestioned, in those relationships. You didn't think about them as people. You didn't ask yourself even what they were like. What had Rosemary been like? That might be very important now. A lot might depend upon it. Iris cast her mind back into the past. Herself and Rosemary as children. Rosemary had been her elder by 6 years. Glimpses of the past came back, brief flashes, short scenes, herself as a small child eating bread and milk, and Rosemary, important in pigtails, doing lessons at a table. The seaside one summer, Iris envying Rosemary, who was a big girl and could swim. Rosemary going to boarding school, coming home for the holidays. Then she herself at school, and Rosemary being finished in Paris. Schoolgirl Rosemary, clumsy, all arms and legs. Finished, Rosemary coming back from Paris with a strange, new, frightening elegance. Soft-voiced, graceful, with a swaying, undulating figure, with red-gold chestnut hair and big, black-fringed, dark-blue eyes. A disturbing, beautiful creature, grown up, in a different world. From then on, they had seen very little of each other. The 6-year gap had been at its widest. Iris had still been at school, Rosemary in the full swing of a season. Even when Iris came home, the gap remained. Rosemary's life was one of late mornings in bed, fork luncheons with other debutantes, dances most evenings of the week. Iris had been in the schoolroom with Mademoiselle, had gone for walks in the park, had had supper at 9 o'clock and gone to bed at 10. The intercourse between the sisters had been limited to such brief interchanges as, "Hello, Iris. Telephone for a taxi for me, there's a lamb. I'm going to be devastatingly late." Or, "I don't like that new frock, Rosemary. It doesn't suit you. It's all bunch and fuss." Then had come Rosemary's engagement to George Barton. Excitement, shopping, streams of parcels, bridesmaids' dresses. The wedding. Walking up the aisle behind Rosemary, hearing whispers, "What a beautiful bride she makes!"